Morning, everyone. It's good to be able to be here today. I always appreciate the opportunity to get up in front of you and give you a little thought that comes to my brain every now and again. Brian mentioned last week that I'd be giving you a little bit of a sermon on evangelism, and I had to kind of try and figure out where I wanted to go with that. And as I was doing so, I figured, you know what? If we're trying to bring people to God and to Jesus, then we should be able to be better representatives of God himself. So that led me into a study of God. And so there's a very nice song out there. I don't know, maybe some of you have heard this song. It has a really good message. And I would just like to read the lyrics of this song for you so we can kind of be on the same page. It's not in our hymnals or anything, but I'm going to try and set up the scene. The music video does a pretty good job on doing this, but setting up the scene, this guy who's singing the song, he's in an airport, starting out in an airplane, and he's seeing the world around him in the state it is in. So here's verse one. It says, "Look down from a broken sky, traced out by the city lights, my world from a mile high. Best seat in the house tonight, touch down on the cold black top, hold on for the sudden stop, breathe in the familiar shock of confusion and chaos. All those people going somewhere, why have I never cared?" Verse 2, he's looking around at the people around him. He says, "Step out on the busy street, see a girl and our eyes meet. Does her best to smile at me to hide what's underneath. There's a man just to her right, black suit and a bright red tie, too ashamed to tell his wife he's out of work, he's buying time. All those people going somewhere, why have I never cared?" Then we come to the bridge of the song. It says, "I've been there a million times, a couple million lives just moving past me by. I never thought I was wrong, but I want a second glance, so give me a second chance to see the way you've seen the people all along." And then we get to the chorus, which says, "Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see." This song is by Brandon Heath, and it's called Give Me Your Eyes, and I just now remembered this. There are bulletins available, so raise your hand if you want one of those. Tanner reminded me. But this song has a very good message, and in the course of this song, there are four requests made. They are, give me your eyes, give me your love, give me your arms, and give me your heart. And I believe there is a lesson to be learned here in this song. We are called to be like Jesus, who is like God, so we should long to have his qualities. Turn over to Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter 15. I appreciate Luke reading out of the book of Luke for us here. Luke, we're going to read this story again, the parable of the prodigal son. And it's a long read. We're going to read the whole thing this time. So starting in verse 11, Luke 15, starting in verse 11, "And he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that is coming to me.' And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread? But I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion, and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to his father, 'Father, I sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, quickly bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to them, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you, and I have never disobeyed you, your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. I feel like when we read the story, everybody kind of, I feel like, knows the story pretty well. We either tend to put ourselves in one of two places, put ourselves in the place of the younger or older brother, because, you know, we try to attribute the father being God, which is right. And we, you know, see ourselves as sinful creatures and, you know, come crawling back every time we mess up. But just for today, I want us to put ourselves in the shoes of the Father. Remember the four things that were requested in the course of that song, which was eyes, give me your eyes, give me your love, give me your arms and your heart. Look again at verse 20 here in Luke 15. And he arose and came to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him, felt compassion, ran and embraced him, and kissed him. All four of these attributes are present here in this verse. His eyes, the father saw him. Love, he felt compassion. Arms, he embraced him. And heart, I put, he kissed him, because, you know, another form of compassion and love. God has these qualities. So should we. So I would like to look at these qualities of God so we can better apply them to our own lives, so that way we can better be like God and therefore draw people in easier, I feel like. So first thing, eyes. What does God see? Obviously, this goes far beyond physical sight, more of seeing who you are. Let's turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 16. 1 Samuel chapter 16. Going to read verses 6 and 7. 1 Samuel 16, 6 and 7. When they came, he looked on Eliab and thought, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks on the heart. God sees the heart of man. Let's look just a few verses down in verse 12. This is speaking about David, and he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. David was chosen because, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, of his heart, because he was after God's own heart. Because God sees us for who we really are. You know, we may put on a good show for others, you know, put on a smiling face when we go out in public, but God really knows the truth. He knows if you're hurting. He knows if you're unrepentant. He knows if you're sorry for what you have done. We need to see people for who they really are and who they will be. Every person you come into contact with is a soul as precious as your own. And we all know that somebody took the time and effort to put effort into you so that way you can be where you are today. God also sees your intentions. Let's turn over to Luke chapter 21. Luke chapter 21. Look starting in verse 1. Luke 21 starting in verse 1. Jesus looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the offering box. And he saw a poor widow put in two small copper coins. And he said, truly, I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had to live on." Jesus was more impressed with the widow's two coins over anything a rich person had to offer. She gave more than any other. Jesus saw the true effort that this widow was putting out. He didn't care about the amount of money. He saw that she was truly giving all that she had to God. So we also should see others, not what they don't do, but what they are doing. "Give me your eyes so I can see everything I keep missing." We need to see people as God sees them. The next thing that's requested in that song is love. How does God love? And that's a serious question. How does God love? I know He's God, but I sometimes just can't simply understand the amount of love and compassion He has for some of the people in this world. Look over in Romans chapter 5. Romans chapter 5. Look at verse 6. We know that Jesus died for all. Romans 5, starting in verse 6. "While we were still weak, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die. But God shows His love for us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." Jesus died for all mankind to give each one of us eternal life. You know, we should know what love is by now. I mean, a lot of our culture is based on love. But just in case you don't remember what love is, according to Merriam-Webster, love is strong affection for another arising out of kinship or personal ties. But in the Bible, love means something much more. Turn over to 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13. We're going to read this whole chapter because you can't sum up love as simply as Merriam-Webster does, at least not true love. 1 Corinthians 13, starting in verse 1. "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices in truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecies, they will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. So now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, but the greatest of these is love." This love is the type of love that God shows us perfectly. It is also the same love that we are to reciprocate to others. Turn over to 1 John chapter 4. 1 John 4, look at verse 19. 1 John 4, 19, "We love because He first loved us. If anyone says, 'I love God,' and hates his brother, he is a liar, for he who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him: whoever loves God must also love his brother." And you know, that seems very simple and easy, but then you have to think about the time span that we're supposed to love. Turn over to John chapter 15. John 15, starting in verse 12. We have Jesus speaking here. John 15, starting verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone laid down his life for his friends. We are to love until death. Love is the single greatest force, I would say, besides God, and it is the driving force of God sending his Son. It was at the beginning of time, and it will never end. Give me your love for humanity. The next thing that is requested in this song is arms. Where can God not reach? I know I put up here arms of wrath, and y'all, some of you are probably a little bit confused as why I put wrath. I promise, I'll explain. The arms of God are described as outstretched in multiple ways. The first way that I found that God's arm is outstretched in wrath. Turn over to Psalms 89. Psalm 89. We can see an example here in verse 10. Psalm 89, verse 10. You crushed Rahab like a carcass. You scattered your enemies with your mighty arm. Now, this is not the harlot Rahab. This was, in this time period, it was believed to be a mythical sea creature or monster. And sea monsters are symbols of evil and chaos. And we can see God is destroying this evil and chaos with his mighty arm. And we can turn over to Isaiah chapter 30, if you'd like to turn over there. Isaiah 30. Look at verse 30. Isaiah 30, verse 30. And the Lord will cause his majestic voice to be heard, and the descending blow of his arm to be seen, in furious anger and a flame of devouring fire, with a cloudburst and storm and hailstones. His arm has this great power. It's very destructive, obviously, as we can see here reading in this verse. And this is what happens when you leave God's side. Luckily, we can also see that the powerful arms that he has that can destroy things are described as something else. They're described as being outstretched in love. Turn over just a few chapters to Isaiah 59. Isaiah 59, look at verse 1. Isaiah 59, verse 1, behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, nor his ear dull that it cannot hear. God's arm is always right there. God will always help you in your time of need as long as you are looking for him and reaching out to him. We can also go back to Psalm 89 and look at verse 21. Psalm 89, verse 21. Same chapter that he was destroying this beast, this sea monster. Look at just a few verses at verse 21. Actually, start in verse 20. I found David my servant. With my holy oil I have anointed him, so that my hand shall be established with him. My arm also shall strengthen him. Obviously, this is talking about David here, but he will also strengthen you. So you are better equipped for the next battle or the next test you have to enter. And we need the arms of God to reach the broken. Turn over to Jude chapter 1. Jude chapter 1. Well, there's only one chapter in Jude. Look at verse 22 and 23. Jude verses 22 and 23, and have mercy on those who doubt. Save others by snatching them out of the fire. To others show mercy with fear, hating even the garment stained by the flesh. Only with God's arms can we reach into sin and pull somebody out without getting burned. We need the arms of God to reach the broken. The arms of God protect and help others whenever they look to him. So we also should protect and help anyone who is looking for it. But That leads us to the last thing that is requested in this song. We cannot do this without the heart, the proper attitude and heart. So what is God looking for? When we think of God's heart, we tend to think of love, as we've kind of talked about already. But they can be two separate things. In 1 Samuel 13, we see that King Saul has disobeyed God. Let's turn back over there. 1 Samuel 13. We're going to look in verse 12. 1 Samuel 13, verse 12. And I said, "Now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the favor of the Lord. So I forced myself and offered the burnt offering. And Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God, with which he commanded you, for then the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you.'" God searches out and he looks for those who have his own heart. It's not necessarily love, but those who do what is good. And we know that God chooses David. Look over in chapter 16. Chapter 16, we're going to read just a few verses here. We're going to start in verse 5. 1 Samuel 16, verse 5. And he said, "Peaceably I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." So he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. And when they came, he looked on Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." We can jump down, verse 12. "And he sent and brought him in, and now he was ruddy and beautiful, and had beautiful eyes, and was handsome. And the Lord said, 'Arise, anoint him, for this is he.' And Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward. And Samuel rose up and went to Ramah." There are many reasons why David was after God's own heart. And I would like to look at just a few of those. The first one we're going to find in Psalm 119. Psalm 119. We're going to look at verse 97. Psalm 119, verse 97. "Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day." David was a man after God's own heart because he literally loved the word. He loved what God has said. He loved what God has done. He loved it. He immersed himself in it every day. It is his meditation all the day. And this is not all that he did. He also hid the word in his heart. Jump back a few verses to verse 11. Psalm 119, verse 11. "I have stored up your word in my heart that I might not sin against you." Not only did he meditate in this word and he loved it and loved what God said, he kept it in his heart. He hid it in his heart and kept it for himself. And it was deep in him. Keeping this in his heart also caused him to do many things, like confessing his sins. Turn over to Psalm 51. Psalm 51. We can see in verse 3. Psalm 51, verse 3. "For I know my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me." David was a man after God's own heart because he loved his word, he hid the word in his heart, and he confessed his sins. He knew that he messed up. He knew he wasn't perfect. No man is perfect except Jesus. But he addressed it, and he took care of it. We can also see that David was a man after God's own heart because he hated every false way. Turn back to Psalm 119. Psalm 119, look at verse 104. Psalm 119, verse 104. Through your precepts I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way. And jump down to verse 128. Therefore I consider all your precepts to be right, I hate every false way. David didn't like evil. I don't think any of us here like evil, otherwise I don't think you would be here. But he hated every false way. He was against it. He actually loved unity. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 19. Hold on one second. No, I put that there for a reason. Proverbs 6, verse 19, a false witness who breathes out lies and one who sows discord among the brothers. See, I don't know why I put that in there. There was some verse. I probably was thinking the verse of where he was with Jonathan. That's the one where he's with Jonathan and they make a covenant with each other. They loved unity. He didn't, even though Saul wanted to kill him, he still loves Saul and his family. But all of these qualities led David to be extremely blessed by God. Let's turn to Psalm 89. Psalm 89. Look at verse 3 and 4. Psalm 89, 3 and 4. You have said, I have made a covenant with my chosen one. I have sworn to David my servant. I will establish your offspring forever. I will build your throne for all generations. Selah. God made a covenant with David, and Jesus was David's descendant. And we can go over to Acts chapter 13. Acts chapter 13. Look at verse 21. Acts 13, verse 21. Then they asked for a king, and God gave them Saul, the son of Kish, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, for 40 years. And when he had removed him, he raised up David to be their king, of whom he testified and said, I have found in David, the son of Jesse, a man after my heart, who will do all my will. Of this man's offspring, God has brought to Israel a Savior, Jesus, as he promised. The heart of God is perfect. And there are many verses that say the heart of man is not, but we still have to learn to have the heart of God for the people of this world. Our goal is to be just like Jesus in our everyday lives. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 11. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Look at verse 1. Be imitators of me as I am of Christ. Also, keep in mind Ephesians chapter 5. If I can turn over there, Ephesians chapter 5, and look at verses 1 and 2. Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. Jesus showed us how to use our eyes, our love, our arms, and our heart to bring others closer to him. We are to be beacons of light and hope in this world, which leads others to Jesus in whatever way we can. If you're really good at one of these things, if you're really good at, you know, having a heart like God, use it. If you can see somebody and you can see their potential and you can see the effort they're trying, use it. I like to keep in mind Romans chapter 12, verses 4 through 9 says, for as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we through many are one body in Christ and individually members of one another. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy in proportion to our faith, if service in our serving, the one who teaches in his teaching, the one who exhorts in his exhortation, the one who contributes in generosity, the one who leads with zeal, the one who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness, Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. We are the body of Christ, and we are blessed to help others become a part of the body as well. And I said party, and it kind of is like a party. It's going to be a cosmic party. A party one day. We're all going to be in heaven together. But here's the real kicker. You may think, oh yeah, this is great and good, but you cannot lead others to Christ if you're not a part of his body. You're not a part of his family yourself. You should consider it greatly. It's the most important decision you'll ever make, committing your life to Christ. In a second, we're going to sing a song, The World's Bible. You can go ahead and take your songbooks out. It says, Christ has no hands but our hands to do his work today. For those of you who have already committed your life to Christ, think about this song and think about how you can go out into the world tomorrow or today and this coming year and bring others to Christ. But for those of you who have not committed your life to Christ, understand that Christ does not have hands without you. You are needed to bring others to him, and we want you and he wants you more than even all of us combined do. If you'd like to become a Christian, or if there's anything we can do for you, why don't you come to the front as we stand and sing.
Christ has no